All right. This is episode 442, Graham.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. 442.
You know, a couple days later, but still this week.
Oh, dude. Was fighting the dumbest cold.
Ever?
Ever. Mm-hmm. I haven't been this sick in forever. Usually I get sick a couple of days.
Knock it out.
Back in business. Mm-hmm. I take a bunch of zinc and vitamin C, and I eat garlic.
Keeps vampires away.
Well, there's a little bit of a vampire issue by me, so I want to make
sure. Well, yeah, it's Santa Monica.
Yeah, there's a lot of beach vampires.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we all saw Lost Boys.
It's a true story.
Yeah.
It's really, it's a biopic, Lost Boys.
Yeah.
But yeah, so God, I've just been sick, but I'm, you know, I had to go to fucking urgent care. Like, I'm feeling a little better, obviously.
Yep.
So we're recording.
We're good. You know, you're a trooper. You're like, you know, I'm not 100%, but I'm still going to record. You're here. You're here for the people, the fans. You're here for them. You just want to go home. I know. I get it.
No, honestly, this is taking some energy out of me. But I was like, I woke up this morning. I was like, oh, fuck. I got somewhere to go. Finally.
Yeah.
I've been going a little bananas. Because I've only gone to, like, the CVS and the store to buy soup. And I was starting to go crazy. Like, I've been binge watching West Wing. It's really...
Oh, wow.
And
you've already seen West Wing.
I've seen the entire thing. Like,
can I just say, you're making... being sick sound really cool, right?
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Doesn't sound that horrible. Yeah.
I usually do a lot in the day. I haven't worked out. I haven't been surfing in a week, a week, which is a crime in and of itself.
Yeah.
And this is brutal.
Well, you know, the salt water would have exacerbated your sinus infection, so it's for the best.
Sure.
You know, a jellyfish could have gotten up there. You don't know.
I thought salt would be an antiseptic.
Yes, actually, salt is good. They tell you to rinse your nasal passages with saline, which is what I've been doing.
Yeah.
Salt water is great for it.
Yeah.
Chris doesn't know what he's talking about. Just because he's married to a scientist doesn't mean that he is one.
It hasn't rubbed off.
Not in the least.
I have a long history of sinus problems, so I know way too much. I'm a Cliff Clavin when it comes to the sinus stuff. So, you know, that's a saline solution there.
You've got an engraved neti pot?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
God, I got that tweet 500 times this week.
Oh, use a neti pot.
The neti pot.
Yeah.
Shut up. I don't know what a neti pot is. Use a tincture with a neti pot. Stop making up words.
It's a cult.
It is a cult.
You know what? It's a fancy version of a squirt bottle with salt water in it. That's literally what it is.
Just take a hot bath, steam it out. I don't need a special pot. Mm-hmm. I drank so much goddamn tea this week.
Well, this is different. You would actually shove it up your nose for a neti pot.
You know, no.
You're not going to do that? That's weird.
I'm not going to stick an appliance or whatever up my nose.
Yeah, and what's weird is you actually have to use an actual teapot. So.
See? I'm already on.
Yeah.
I do have to say it's genuine, though, because I did it a few years ago, and after I did it, I just wanted to call people and just be like, you got to do this thing.
What is a neti pot?
It just feels so, it's like such a cleaning. You can see stuff coming out of your nose. Yeah. It just flushes your nose.
It's you heat up water, not too hot, because then you pour it in one nostril and it comes out the other. And you mix it
with about a
sinuses.
Teaspoon of salt, and it's literally a teapot. And you just pour it in the nostril, it comes out the other, and it's just such a cleansing feeling. Nobody makes any money off of it except for the people that sell the actual pots, which I like.
Well, the salt industry.
Yeah, that's true.
by the third of
a teaspoon full.
Yeah.
But like, you know, when you go to the doctor and he tells you to take like whatever the over-the-counter version of that is, he probably has reps. I'm getting cynical way too early here, but like he probably has hot girls that show up against hot girls, but... they'll show up and they'll say, hey, we're the nasal gel people or whatever. And then he'll recommend that to all of his clients his patients.
Well, let's introduce our guest, our nasal expert.
Nasal. We got on a hot button issue.
Ladies and gentlemen, been on the show before, but hasn't been on for a while. Yeah, it's glad to have him.
He's been working through his nasal issues.
That's the only thing I'm passionate about nowadays.
Comedian, musician, songwriter, balladeer, can we say balladeer?
Sure.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Henry Phillips.
Hey, thanks, guys. Mm-hmm. I always feel weird, like, when you haven't been introduced yet, but I figure when you click on the podcast, it probably has my name.
Because that's so, the thing. Everyone's always, oh, you shouldn't talk until you're spoken. I'm like, yeah, but it, every podcast says, you know, this will say Comedy Film Nerds Ep 442 with Henry Phillips. So you'll know who you are. Yeah.
Unless we put surprise guest instead.
Or unless they just have it on an ongoing thing and it just jumps to the next episode and they're in their car. I don't know.
Okay.
But sure.
That's a fair point.
That's a fair point. Yeah, if they're binge listening.
Yeah. If what if they're listening and they're using a neti pot? They can't check.
They can't. There's a lot of stuff
there's
going
no way.
On.
Yeah. It's a lot of moving parts.
I just had to jump in on that one because it's like, how often does neti pot come in? I got to jump in.
I want to say this is the first one out of 500 some episodes that we've done. That this is.
Although now, to be fair, on Twitter, it comes up all the time.
All right. I'm going to hear a bunch of neti pot people.
Yeah.
I'm sure the neti some and then someone's gonna
hashtag free the pot.
Free the pot. And then someone's gonna email, actually a neti pot blew up my kid.
Oh, yeah.
Someone's
yeah.
gonna be mad at the
I've
neti pot.
I've already seen that, yeah. I've seen people say that it gives you infections unless you're using distilled water and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. I like to live on the edge, you know. I just boil it and let it cool down a little bit.
Generally boiling is a you know, kind of gets rid of
I
most
just
things.
Bought a
yeah.
goddamn holistic saline spray that you just
I think it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't say you know get into the whole neti pot controversy.
I just say
you got to weigh in, Brad.
God damn it! Pick a side, yeah. folks.
It just feels good.
That's blue or all. Red neti pot? Come on.
What are you pro or anti neti pot?
It's like everything nowadays. You got to pick your side.
Pick a side. Are we going to have a neti pot debate?
Speaking of picking sides, let's talk about Overlord.
Are you guys going to be on the opposite
to pick a side?
Yeah, you have to pick a side.
Are you pro or anti Nazi zombie?
Yeah. Are you for or against Nazi experimentation? What's you know? How do you come down on bending genres of monster and World War II movies?
Well, so we're going to do a spoiler ep on
this,
just to clarify. So we'll do the broad strokes on this Overlord. Now this is I've been told. By Micah Wright, who's been a guest on the show, also is a video game writer, that this is kind of taken from a video game idea. Wolfen something?
Wolfenstein.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of, Nazi monster stories over the years, not just in video games. You've got Wolfenstein. You also have Call of Duty has a zombies add-on, which is literally World War II with zombies.
Add-on.
Yes. Yeah, because you play the regular Call of Duty game, which is a regular World War II shooting Nazis, but then you can get downloadable content to get an extra couple levels that have zombies in them.
So. See, this feels like a video game neti pot.
Yeah.
It just feels like.
Yep. You pour the allies in one nostril and Nazis come out the other one. Because you're flushing it. You feel cleansed.
Bro.
So you're getting the zombie Nazis out of your nose. That's it's definitely not it's not a new concept. In fact, Matt Weinhold was here last week saying that there are other Nazi monster movies that have been over the years too.
Okay.
So that being said, I thought this movie was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And it was one of those movies that I love where it makes no bones about what it is. Like, look, this is a World War II zombie kind of Nazi monster movie. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to pretend it's anything but.
Right.
So, but what I did like is that the movie starts out, it really feels like a World War II movie.
They
did
a great job. Like the opening World War II stuff was great.
Had like a sucker punch to it. Like it felt, I don't know, legit or whatever.
Yeah. Because it felt like there was attention to detail on the World War II stuff. It wasn't like, all right, just get these guys in some World War II costumes and, we'll go on the Universal lot and just run around, then we'll add the monsters. But no, it really felt like, you know, there was attention to detail to the equipment, the uniforms, the weapons.
Well, they were on D-Day. They were part of the D-Day invasion, so they were trying to...
I love when they do that.
Yeah, there was historical references, and it really felt like you were watching a World War II movie until, you know, it got crazy and monstery.
Yeah, I like that new trend of, trying to create a believable world where, like, I mean, Walking Dead, I think, does a good job.
Yes, for sure.
I mean, when if you take out the zombies, you still have just a drama, you know?
Right.
And I like that. Mm-hmm. I've never really been that into the jokey kind of horror stuff. I like it to be a little bit more serious.
Well, I like that, too. When the writers go, if this actually happened,
yeah, exactly.
Like, how would people actually react to this we're taking a real thing that happened, taking the D-Day invasion, and we're putting this crazy shit in there, how would they react to it?
Well, that was a specific goal of the filmmakers with the actors, because the movie actually featured more practical effects than CG effects.
Which was noticeable, and I liked it.
Yeah, me too, for sure. It felt more realistic and grounded because you didn't have a bunch of, you know, cartoon monsters running around and flying or whatever. But apparently that was also done to get a better reaction from the actors involved in the scenes where something gruesome would happen.
And they had some good scares in the film. I mean, they had some
good gross out stuff.
Yeah, some good gross out, jump out of your seat. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of felt like some of those zombie movies of the 70s.
Yes.
You know, and I was like, I thought that was a really cool.
And it really was a mashup of different, Mike is not wrong. Like, you know, you look, there's pieces of like video games. There are pieces of Reanimator. There's pieces of Saving Private Ryan. There's like all these different pieces of movies. Now, you know, there's such a potential for that to be a mess, and also just it felt like that. But when it comes together properly, which I think this movie did, it's really fun. Like, is it going to win any Oscars? No. And it doesn't pretend it's going to. But, you know, it's a pulpy, fun genre action horror movie, for sure. And, it wasn't like campy and dumb, there wasn't a lot of quippy lines, like they're joking through it. Like, it was it really felt like it had the right tone, it had the right atmosphere. I just thought it was really well done all the way through.
Yeah, I it got a little slow for me.
Okay.
At times. I mean, I liked the I liked the opening. The opening invasion and stuff was really great. I mean, they were like, and then getting into the French village was really interesting. The director really hasn't done much. A lot. He did Son of a Gun, which is his only other feature.
Did a lot of shorts.
Then did a lot of shorts, and and then the writer was a big name writer. It was Billy Ray. And Billy Ray.
Well, there's a number of writers, yeah. Well, this is like a J.J. Abrams produced, but just threw his name on it.
He did Captain Phillips. He did The Hunger Games.
That's one of the writers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My eyes aren't very good. He looks very confident. happy with his work. Yeah. Self-satisfied.
Yeah.
Captain Phillips. I love that movie. I thought that was great. I'm sure you guys already talked about it
but
relevant.
It's worth talking about because he's an Oscar nominated.
It's that hyper realism thing. I guess it's that crew, like that director, or whatever they did. United 93 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That same kind of style.
Well, it's interesting, and this is something that Micah brought up. You know, he was a little frustrated. He said, "This is why Hollywood just keeps hiring the same people, and why there's not a lot of new interesting movies being made, because they're not hiring any younger writers or actors or getting new blood in there," which is a valid point. And I think this movie, I enjoyed it. I had fun. It was just slow at times,
right?
For me, but
and you know, it wasn't a $150 million movie.
No,
it was it was probably that kind of mid range.
Yeah,
that we never see anymore. Because also, you look at the casting. Like, this was clearly, it was a studio movie, and it had a decent budget because of J.J. Abrams' name. But they weren't going to give him a Mission Impossible budget or anything like that. So I'm going to guess, 50, 60, around there.
That's my guess. I can't find any numbers on it right now. Or no, the budget says $38
million. Oh, wow. So it's actually close to 40, so it was actually even less.
Yeah.
Any celebs in the cast?
No, that's what's interesting about the cast. Again, it's a horror movie, so it goes by different rules.
Yeah.
But, this is a bigger budget horror movie. So instead of no-name actors or name actors, it's actors in the middle where you just go, oh, I've seen that guy in something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, that are have been in stuff, but you can't necessarily recognize their names. That's another thing that
is a challenge too. I mean, people like celebrities, but like, you know,
and that keeps Captain the budget Phillips, lower.
Other than Tom Hanks, like, you know, I didn't know who any of these people were. And then apparently it was just a massive casting call that they did. But yeah, in a horror movie, that always takes me a little bit out of it too. When it's like,
absolutely.
Oh yeah, this is Alec Baldwin or whatever.
You know, it's you know, Brad Pitt in World War Z.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, this is a big giant Hollywood star running from zombies.
Yeah,
it feels just weird.
And I think that was smart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it was like, if you're, especially you're just having, I mean, the story is just.
Probably knocked $20 million off the budget too.
Yeah,
of course it did. Yeah.
It becomes closer to a $100 million movie if you start adding folks like that. But that it added to the thing we were talking about earlier, which is it felt real. It felt like these are just GIs, just regular Joes fighting World War II, like every other American guy had to do. Then
that's awesome,
you know, and just parachute in and go get the Nazis. And oh shit, some of them are mutant freaks, you know, like. And I thought the casting too of the French girl was really good, and her. Mm-hmm. Having to deal with her storyline and
the Nazi occupation just happened to have a crazy experimental hospital in it.
Happened to a lot of French jokes.
Yeah. But you know, I felt like all of the overlay was just really kind of more organic to like a World War II film. It's like, all right, their mission, you know, knock out the tower, you know, very, very classic, sort of boys can land, you know,
get this tower out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was smart because it was like a ticking time clock about a thing that we knew actually happened.
Yes.
D-Day they were like in the advance team.
Right.
If we don't knock out that tower, then the Nazis are going to be able to wipe out our D-Day invasion.
Right.
So we have to make this, this has to happen, you know, but there happens to be a dungeon underneath.
Yes, that, they're doing experiments and making monsters.
Wow.
So, we'll get more into it in the spoiler, but I will say this is one where I was excited to see, and it didn't disappoint. I thought it was really fun. My wife and I went to see it on date night. So, and she enjoyed it as well because it was it's just kind of that fun, pulpy, you know, horror movie, but also it did a good job mixing genres. It felt like, you know, World War II, like you couldn't say that like, well, it was mostly horror movie, it was mostly World War II. It was both. It really was a mix of both.
It's fun. It's a fun film.
So, all right. So let our guests go next.
Let's
for mid-90s.
Sure. Yeah.
What was mid-90s like?
Mid-90s. I liked it overall. I thought it was great.
Now this was Jonah Hill's Garden State.
Yeah, it's his first directorial, which I was kind of surprised for some reason. I just feel like he's so prolific in other ways. I thought he must have directed something before, but he hadn't. And, what were the things that I liked? Well, I always liked that realism. I definitely got caught up in that. It was, it had that thing, because I'm always hypersensitive to that when somebody says something that I'm just like, okay, no real person would ever say that to another person. I'm out. And, you know, even though it kind of went, you always have to go up to that line because you want it to be a story that's worth telling, you know. But for the most part, I bought all of it, and I like the tone of it. It's a period piece. It takes place in somewhere around the mid-90s. I did my homework, guys.
God, you're a sharp guy.
I feel like I'm doing my oral book report from sixth grade. It took place in the mid-90s. I literally did a book report about an Olympic runner named Wilma and didn't read the book. And the book was called Wilma. And I just said, this is about somebody named Wilma. And that was all I knew, but that was bad. But anyway, yeah, mid-90s. So, you know, there's these period things.
What's the significance of the title?
I'm not sure. I couldn't figure that out. The whole time I'm trying to figure it out.
That's his age?
But something like that. But so you know that there's shows like Stranger Things and all these shows now that are period pieces. And, you know, I don't want to go against that because I know those are really hugely popular, but, and I'm a huge fan of Freaks and Geeks, and I love those little Easter eggs, you know, when they would talk about, like, the Dukes of Hazzard or whatever it is. But it was refreshing that this movie didn't care that much. I mean, it was like, yeah, this is the setting. It's a little bit like, you know, if you're watching a World War II movie or something like that, they're not going to keep on playing that song over and over again and being like, see, that's the music they used to listen to back then. It's like, yeah, we get it. You know, they just had a story to tell, and this is a beautiful setting for it.
Oh, look, they're playing the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B.
Yeah.
Every World War II movie ever.
Yeah. Because when you think about it, I actually read an interview with one of the producers, and he brought up something really interesting where he said, you know, when... My life in the 90s probably looked a lot like a life that was combined of 90s, 80s, and 70s. If you looked at my house or the music I was listening to, it's not like everything you're doing at that moment is just representative of that one year. You probably had pants that you bought back in 89 or whatever, you know? So
there was cars on the road that were in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, unless you're lucky enough to have one of the brand new cars, you're not going to be mid-90s everything. So,
and everyone in every era has always had nostalgia
For the previous
one.
Yeah.
I mean, so they're going to... Everyone in the 90s, like 70s music was starting to like...
Exactly.
Hey, you know?
But that's too hard for a production designer.
Yeah, exactly. It's too hard for them to justify.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, everybody... Their job is always to make things on the nose. And I ran into this a little bit with our movies because... The one thing, this was one of my favorite things that happened, was like we needed this was in our movie Punching Henry from a few years ago. There was a scene where I show up to my car and it's got bird shit on it. And so if you tell, you know, a prop person that the car is supposed to have bird shit, there's going to be bird shit and it's going to be huge. You know, because that's just sort of like the one thing that they have to do. But then when we saw it, we were just like... That's no bird that I've ever heard. That's like pterodactyl shit or something like that.
Or, you know, a kennel?
Like. Yeah, so every now and then you'll run into people that just try to do their job so well that you're sort of like, okay, and I'm thinking what you said about production designer, you know, with mid-90s, the tendency is going to be just go all out on the 90s, but this movie didn't really do that. I was probably about 26 when this... I probably knew both of you guys at the time that this movie is supposed to take place.
Right.
It was about a bunch of 13-year-olds, I believe, and like 12 to 15-year-old. The main character, I don't know if he's even younger than that. It's the kid from... did you guys see Killing of a Sacred Deer? Mm-hmm. The youngest kid on that. That was an interesting movie. He's got a weird name. I can't remember. Sultan
Soljic.
Yeah. So he's great. I'd look out for him. But he's really young. But so he plays this kid who has a tough home life, and he starts hanging out with these skater kids. And it looks to me like it probably takes place in like Venice High School or somewhere out by the beach there. There's a lot of... that kind of palm tree. Mm-hmm. But there's some beautiful shots, like aesthetically beautiful.
Where the vampires
beautiful.
Live.
Yeah, yeah. And there's vampires, like right in the middle of it. No, Nazis. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of other movies that I've seen that are in the same... Well, I actually am one of the few people that never saw Kids. I don't know, but apparently this was sort of a little bit an homage or derived from that kind of style.
It must have been disturbing and hard to watch.
There were a couple of pretty dark moments, but it never really got too bad. But
well, Kids is the entire running time of that.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I understand. Yeah, and but you know, I'm trying to think of some of the. It was very understated. I mean, as you would probably expect from a guy like Jonah Hill, he seems like an understated guy, you know. Mm-hmm. And I went in wanting to hate it, like I do with everything that I do. But so I'm always either proven correct or pleasantly surprised, and I was pleasantly surprised.
So then you think Jonah Hill, like, is a decent director?
Yeah, I think he's got a thing. I mean, at least it appeals to my taste. I don't know if it's very commercial.
Well, it was a coming-of-age story, right?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I think it's smart when... what can happen with first-time directors, especially if they... are, you know, came up acting, is sometimes they feel like, oh, I got to direct, you know, and there's got to be all these big crazy camera shots and I got to do all this stuff that goes, hey, look at me directing.
Yeah.
When really it's directing the actors and just getting good, subtle performances out of people. And when an actor you know, depending on the movies they came up and the other actors they came up with, sometimes it makes them phenomenal directors because they were on the set with these amazing actors and these amazing directors, and they go, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. It wasn't this big moment. The director just pulled the guy aside and went, hey, just pretend this. Or, you know, just the slight adjustment. Mm-hmm. The director just gave them a slight adjustment, and that made their performance better. And then they watched the final cut, went, man, the director was on the nose. I thought I had to come in and do backflips, and all I had to do was just make a subtle adjustment. So then they that translates to when they direct actors, and I think you can get these great little movies out of that.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it comes across that that this was directed by an actor and a good subtle actor, you know, because yeah, I mean, it's almost like a magic trick to me. Like if you can get a bunch of people that are completely unknown, I don't know who any of these people are except for that kid I saw in that other movie, but and just act like there's no camera there. That's a wonderful thing, you know. And you know, it wasn't like what would be an example? It wasn't like Florida Project, which I thought was great.
Right.
Am I saying that right? Florida
Project. Yeah, the Florida Project. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which was fantastic. That one almost felt like you were watching a documentary or something. This one, it knew it was a movie. It's just, but it was just a little bit, you know, somewhere in between that, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. it was
great.
Pretty impressive. I thought. It's my type of movie. It's probably not for everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. A lot of people might want a little bit more story. The lead character hardly says anything throughout, which is my favorite.
Do you think that you know, Florida Project got a little buzz last year, and we're getting into Oscar season. Do you think this movie could get any nominations or any?
I think that kid is fantastic. Yeah, he's really good. I mean, I think they're all good. I've never, ever been good at predicting Oscars. I'm always way off. But if not for this movie, they're about to launch a career. Everybody in this movie, all the performances were great. Yeah. Now, there's a couple of real standouts. That's the cast right up there, huh? Yeah. Yeah, so those two guys on the right, I'd like to see the interview because it's hard for me to imagine them other than what their characters were. Right. It's like when you see, like, you know, when I was, now we're really used to it, but I remember getting really into The Wire when that first came out. And then I'm just like, whoa, this guy, you know, Idris Elba or whatever, you know, it's like, wow, he's like a badass, you know, and then I'd look up an interview. Well, the weirdest thing about doing that is, and I'm just like, what? You're not the gangster that I thought. McNulty, you know?
Yeah, it was like Irish. Badass guy.
Well, I just don't understand what it's like. It's like, wow, you're just messing with my head so hard. So that would be funny if these guys started
just
talking.
Just a bunch of Brits or whatever.
What in the hell's going on?
I had to learn skating. I had to learn how to be a hood rat.
yeah, no, it's like you see. Yeah, it'd be just funny to see all of your favorite characters.
The movies, I want to see mid-90s, and then the other one that also is getting some buzz is Beautiful Boy that I'm curious to see.
I don't know anything about that one.
That's with Steve Carell, and it's based on an actual...
Oh!
It's actual, father and son about addiction.
Yeah, the kid keeps going through addiction relapse, and it's just how it breaks up the family, and the trailer for it looks amazing.
I saw it. Yeah, they showed the trailer... Before that, does it have that one kid? There's this one
Timothée
kid.
Timothée Chalamet from...
He
was nominated for an Oscar last
year. That one's different. There's another one with... There's this one kid who was in... what's the... Lady Bird? Remember the guy who was her first boyfriend who gets caught in the stall kissing another guy?
Yes.
Did you guys see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that actor is in everything now. Like, he's just...
Yeah.
He was in like three of the trailers that showed before this thing. It's like he's on fire with the indie film thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a Jesse Eisenberg sort of type, I think, you know, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Works real well for this type of genre.
All right.
I would say, you know, I saw this movie right in the daytime and it felt like the appropriate thing to watch. It's definitely not a big blockbuster Saturday night, date night thing. It's probably something that you'd take in personally, you know, because you're a fan of that kind of genre.
Well, speaking of actors turn directors. I saw Boy Erased, which was written and directed by Joel Edgerton, who also acts in the film as well. This is the Gerard Conley's memoir about conversion therapy. Where
I heard about this.
Yeah, this is called Boy Erased, And basically, it's the son of a Baptist preacher is forced to participate in a church-supported gay conversion program after being forcibly outed to his parents. Now, this is Lucas Hedges plays the lead, but it has Nicole Kidman and Joel Edgerton and Russell Crowe in it as the adults. So it's interesting you mentioned this about Jonah Hill's movie. It's interesting when an actor directs a film, especially first time.
That's another of the movies I was just talking about.
Lucas Hedges.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah, he's in everything.
Yeah.
There's a real focus, understandably, on the performances. Mm-hmm. So, and the performances were very good in this film. And this movie was an interesting kind of like, it was a mixed bag. It was a movie that did a lot of things right and just had a couple flaws, for sure. And one of them was that there was so much attention to detail on the adults' performances, like Russell Crowe. Nicole Kidman is absolutely phenomenal in this movie. And it's a slow burn with her. Like, you see her as the mother. It's just kind of going along with everything. And as the movie progresses, you see an arc that you weren't expecting from her. Mm-hmm. And you see performances and scenes that you weren't expecting from her. So I think for her, I think maybe a supporting actress.
Really?
Yeah. It was she wasn't in a ton of scenes, but the ones she was in, just home run. And the reason was because it was so set up. Like, this isn't who this person is at the beginning. And that's why I thought it was really, really interesting. Like, the interesting thing, too, unfortunately, was that Lucas Hedges' character, even though he's based on an actual person, had probably the flattest performance. And it was he starred in it. But all the adults around him, I'm like, even like, is that Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Oh,
like,
wow.
He's in it, too. And so they all did an amazing job, but for whatever reason, the way Lucas Hedges' character playing Jared was portrayed, and the way he was written was, you know, if you're a kid who's struggling with his sexuality, and then your parents force you to go into gay conversion therapy, and you have all this trauma from your childhood, chances are we're going to see some emotional depth. You're going to be going through a lot of changes, a lot of feelings, a lot of moods, a lot of things. This movie doesn't show that. Like, it shows him as kind of like a flat, subdued performance, which I get, but you can't have an entire movie of that. Now, eventually we do get the emotional range that we were expecting from this character and from this story from him, but it takes too long to get there. Like, there's a whole giant section of the movie in the middle where it's just like, all right, we know what's happening. We don't need to see another class of conversion therapy. We need to see what's going to happen next. We need to see how he's reacting to it. We need to see how the parents are reacting to him. We need to see all this interaction, but we need to see it quicker. You know, it was one of those movies, again,
you get ahead
cut
of
out
it.
10 to 20 minutes. That's all you have to do. And, you know, truncate that middle part where literally nothing happens. You know, you can't just have a bunch of nothing happen in the middle of your movie. You know, you have to either build to something or you have to build on what came before. And it just had that lull in the middle. But Joel Edgerton, fantastic job. He's like who runs the Gay Conversion Therapy Center. But here's the thing that I loved most about the movie. Because going into this movie, it's clear, you know, gay conversion therapy is awful and horrible, and it's been denounced by the LGBTQ community. It's been, you know, denounced by medical groups. Anyone with any sense of knowledge understands that this shouldn't be happening.
Or a heart.
And yes. and only a handful of states had banned it before his memoir was released in 2016. Now, slowly but surely, more states are banning it, but there's still a fair amount of states that still have it. But this is what I loved about the movie. The movie very easily could have gone into attack mode and said, look, this is how horrible it is. This is satire. This is like, we're going to show, you know, how heartless all these people are for doing all this, but it didn't. It showed the compassion behind it, which actually made it all more chilling. I almost compared it to like a Marvel villain where, you know, the Marvel villain that's the most effective, or any comic book villain, is the one who thinks he's doing the right thing and has compassion underneath, but is just doing horrible things.
Right.
And it's being justified through whatever reason. And this reason was basically religion. So, but what is also interesting is Russell Crowe's character, he's a preacher, so you see him, you know, the movie starts, he's in the pulpit, he's giving his sermons, but then it shows, I guess he's not full-time because he also works at the car dealership. So, you know, so apparently the preacher is a part-time thing, although it seems to be the most important thing in his life, not selling cars. But, so it was, what I really liked about this movie is it showed that there was actually a sincere, compassionate face underneath this horrible thing just that people misguided. Are doing. Yes, yeah, exactly. Like, because it could easily have just been two-dimensional villains. These are horrible people that, you know, are ignorant or just following religion and are torturing these kids. But it didn't do that. It showed that there's a was a misguided compassion that they really, the families and the center, they really tried to help these kids. So does it change how horrible it is? No, but it gives you a context for it that I wasn't expecting, that I'm glad the movie did, because it's the kind of thing where now you understand it better. Like,
well, what's important is when, because you ask yourself, how can people be...
Right. How can this happen?
This,
how
like,
can
people let's do see this? If she floats and then she's a witch. Like, this is insane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Right,
it's like,
exactly.
No, we have to, this is the right thing, and I'm doing this because I love you, you're my child, and you're going to go to hell unless we shock the gay out of you.
Right.
Like, oh, God, it's horrible. Man.
Yeah,
you can, it makes even more sense, and it makes, like you say, the act of it even worse.
Right.
Because like you say, just wanting evil is just sort of like, oh.
Yeah, mustache swirling.
You're just evil, you know. Yeah. It's just a rabid dog. You got to put it down.
Like, you know, oh, this is a scam center. The guy doesn't care. He just wants the money. And, you know, that wasn't the case. So it was really interesting.
I love that approach.
So it was a really good movie. It was definitely flawed. The biggest flaw was probably the way that the lead was, you know, the kind of dead time with him in the middle of the movie, where there could have been a lot more insight there. We just didn't get it. Like, we got the beginning and the end is like, okay, that's where this movie needs to be. But there was that lull in the middle that but easily could have been fixed in editing.
So
that's all they had to do. Just take it out. Cause you could have taken three or four scenes out of the middle of that film. No one would have missed it.
Of movies that are 20 minutes too long.
Right.
There's really this trend for this, and I'm not quite sure what is motivating it.
I don't know. It's not like flights are getting longer. They're the same.
I guess traditionally, like a... Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, we need 20 more minutes
with
to get
that
to
industry.
Chicago to LA.
Yeah, it's like... that's the new thing. They're going to start picking it based on the flight times.
Yeah.
But, what was I going to say about that? There's a lot of TV shows that do that too. Like I feel like I've watched a lot of these shows that are 10 episodes. I'm not going to name them because some people probably love them and some don't. But where I'm like, this would have been a great hour and a half movie.
Or a 13-episode season should have been 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm I'm watching like a 10-hour movie and I'm going into characters that I don't care about. And then there's a lot of really slow pacing that... It just feels like I'm watching filler a lot of the time. So, yeah, you do sometimes wonder, is there some incentive to have a running time that's a certain thing?
I don't get it because at least, and maybe the answer is the fact that people aren't going to the actual theaters anymore, because the theaters want more turnover. They want movies that are 90 minutes.
Right.
Because they're going to have more screen or show times.
Yes. Sure.
So maybe it's they're like, oh, well, we're doing more business on the download side, the VOD, or selling it to the streaming services, so it needs to be X 2 hours and 15 minutes. I don't know.
Is it a prestige thing? I mean, comedies were always 90 minutes, you know, but if it was a drama, it was always longer. Maybe it's just sort of like an ego thing where it's like, I'm not having a 90-minute drama or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But
you know, Gravity was the perfect length. It was like a 90-minute space drama.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, it still worked in 90 minutes. I didn't need an extra 20 minutes of George Clooney.
No.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Great point. Yeah, I mean, I think it's amazing how good people are at telling stories, even that aren't comics or professionals or whatever. I mean, we know there's a lot of them that suck too, but it's like, but if you just imitate, when you're like, let's say a teenager's telling a story to their friend about something, they just automatically cut out all the crap that doesn't matter, and they just get to the parts that you're interested. Mm-hmm. There's just sort of a natural thing that happens with us. And I think a lot of editors could, well, I don't know about if it's the editor, it might have been the director, whoever, either, yeah, the writer. But a lot of times people,
I will say this, a lot of times that, when you know? When an actor directs a film, it always seems a little long. Mm. You know, like Mr. Saturday Night, how long? Yeah. You know, there was always,
yeah, like,
it's a little too long.
That's, well, an interesting, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example of something that was right on the money. So I watched this, been home watching a lot of Netflix.
Yeah,
this
last you've been week. Streaming.
Been mm-hmm. streaming a lot. So I watched this document. It's a Netflix doc, Tricky Dick and the Man in Black. Mm-hmm. Right. It's a documentary about Johnny Cash being invited to the Nixon White House in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's 58 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And this is where...
Built for TV.
Well, I think it's where, you know, streaming services don't have this hard number to hit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it has to be 70 or 82 minutes to qualify right. for the blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So they just made this hour doc really awesome. Yeah. They went into the history of Johnny Cash and why and what his politics were and how he was sort of starting to change his tune about the Vietnam War and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And why Nixon was trying to do the Southern strategy and everything around it. And it's really, I don't want to give it away because there is, I didn't know this. What songs are you going to sing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, back, this is, and leading up to it, several entertainers had said stuff in the Nixon White House and they were like, stop bombing Vietnam, you know, in the middle of their speech yeah. or their song or whatever. So they were like, Johnny Cash, he, you know, he won't do that. And they're trying mm-hmm. to tell him what songs to sing and all this stuff. So it's really,
wow, you know,
it's a cool doc. And I've said this a million times, the Netflix docs are great.
What did it, like, what was the main point that it tried to focus on? The visit, the music, like what was, like, you know, what was kind of the focal point?
The focal point really went into everything that led up to the visit.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And like the anticipation of whether or not he was going to say something.
Yeah. And you know, Johnny Cash was this big patriot man.
Mm-hmm.
And, but also little things like the Johnny Cash show. You know, back then everyone had a variety show, right? So he mm-hmm. had the Johnny Cash hour or whatever it was mm-hmm. called. And, you know, he liked folk music and was a folk singer. And he had Pete Seeger on that show. You know, he had Bob Dylan on that show, mm-hmm. and he took flack for that.
Right.
Even though he's just like, oh, I like their music, you know, and he was very patriotic.
Mm.
Johnny Cash even had a song ostracizing folk singers for being too political.
Oh, really? I didn't yeah. know that.
Just wow. stick with your diction and, you know, write good. So basically, that's what his song was saying, was mm-hmm. like, just leave your politics out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the thing that they happened to a lot of people.
Maybe he was trying to eliminate the entire folk music genre.
Yeah.
But it was like a lot of people slowly changed as the 60s progressed and we got mm-hmm. into the early 70s. And then him and June Carter Cash performed in Vietnam. And they kind of came away from that like, wait a minute, what's going on over here?
Yeah.
So it was really interesting. You got a history of Johnny Cash and then the maneuvering of the Nixon White House, what they were trying to do. And there's interviews with Nixon cabinet members and Johnny Cash people. And it's really fascinating. It's a great history lesson.
Mm-hmm. I got to see that. Yeah, well, there's great. A song I was recently listening to from Johnny Cash called What Is Truth? I don't know if he wrote that later, but it was very political, you know, anti-war, if you look at the lyrics. Well, but maybe that's the way he became later in his life.
What? Well, I could tell you the history of that song, but it would kind of spoil the...
Oh, really?
I would tell you...
Is it in the movie? Oh, really?
Ooh, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Oh, okay. Well,
so, all right. So check it out.
Check it out.
Streaming. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have some Patreon sponsors. Now,
oh, yeah.
This is a record. This is the most Patreon sponsors we've ever had at one time. They'll be
So we are
excited that you guys are really
You're supporting the show so much, guys.
Yeah, you're jumping right into that ad tier. We really appreciate it. So so here, perk up your ears. You got a couple new ones coming at you. And listen to our in addition to our classics like Johnny Rulon. Johnny Rulon is promoting his novel titled Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon in both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel, which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com. That's happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And the Audacity Performing Arts Project is a charity that produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Please check them out at audacityperformingarts.com. That's audacityperformingarts.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide is a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday wherever podcasts are found. You can find out more at the Coffee Over Suicide site, coffeeoversuicide.com. And Graham and I will be doing that podcast. We just have to schedule it, but probably in the next month or so. So, all right, and Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April of 2018 with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Google Alice Frazier Trilogy for more info. And Rebecca Evans, the art podcast. When we move past hesitation and we're true to ourselves, we find our own art in life. You want to hear some fun stories and get inspired? Check out The Art, facebook.com/theartpodcasts with an S. And from Scott Reinhart, The Night Watchman's a story about a hero who clubs down evil with flashlights and shines light into the darkness when that guy's not working his day job at Home Depot. It's going to be a really cool illustrated novel that will be contributed to by over 30 artists. With game illustrators, cartographers, storybook illustrators, and well-known comic book artists. It's more graphic than novel, but more novel than a graphic novel. For more info, go to ninthpointstudio.com. That's ninthpointstudio.com. And lastly, we have La Calavera by Alan Ross, the story of a pirate radio operator who decides to go into the pirate cable TV business. Darren Loney, together with a group of misfits and the questionable guidance of a spiritual advisor in the form of Richard Nixon, they gear up and take on the world's largest media conglomerate and its egomaniacal celebrity CEO. It's available on Amazon in ebook and hard copy. Hmm. I think that sounds like a great double feature with Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. So check those two out. And let's get into some trailers.
Just go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds.
Yep, and check it out. There we have plenty of tiers, and like even a couple dollars, like if you want to do $1, $2, $5 a month, it all helps. So we really appreciate any contribution level that you you can manage. So now I was excited about this trailer because it's so rare that you get a zombie Christmas musical. So
we've been asking for it.
Yeah, we have been. We have been. It's like, when are we going to get it? So Anna and the Apocalypse, we are going to be seeing that trailer right now.
Here we go. Official trailer.
Official trailer. Wow, it's got 5 million views already.
5 million views. Mm-hmm.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
But to be fair, not young Nazi zombies. Nestled,
all snug in her bed, not knowing tomorrow she'd meet the undead. How would she survive? What this season would bring? Well, that's simple. She'd stab, she'd slash, and she'd sing.
This looks fun.
Oh no.
What?
Justin Bieber's a zombie.
Is this your feel good Christmas?
Yeah.
I'm surprised it got a theatrical release, but I'm all for it. I'll be there.
Let's do it. I like it.
And the next movie will definitely be positioning itself for some Oscar love. Will it get it? Who knows? Stan and Ollie.
Head full of honey? What is that?
That's not it. No, that may not be it.
What's up?
But Stan and Ollie is, of course, based on Laurel and Hardy.
Back projection. Two music.
John C. Reilly.
And action.
He always surprises me. I always think he's like one note, but then he just does something interesting and different.
Today as they embarked on a national tour.
We're doing this while we're waiting for this new picture to come together. I'm going to make sure that this tour gets off on the right foot.
There it is.
I love Steve Coogan too.
It's amazing that you two are still going strong. Still using the same old material.
Yeah. I've gotten
such
that
a wonderful It's okay.
Two double acts for the price of one.
Pretty empty last night.
I guess people just don't want to see Laurel and Hardy anymore.
It's even pushing you a little too hard, babe.
Look how
you
people used to dress up for comedy shows, Graham.
I know.
You could have said goodbye, Oliver.
Everybody has a
long time
of flip-flops.
We had a good thing going, but you had this big chip on your shoulder because I did a picture with someone else.
I couldn't sleep for days when they told me what you did. You're just a lazy ass who got lucky because you met me.
Lucky to spend my life with a man who hides behind his typewriter?
You betrayed me. Betrayed our friendship.
You're hollow.
You cannot go on stage again in your condition.
I love you, but I won't stand by and watch this nutty tour put you in a wooden box.
I didn't realize they had so much turmoil with each other.
Neither did I.
I love him, Mita.
You're not leaving, are you, Stan?
The show must go on.
When you watch our movies, if it's just the two of us.
By the way, Stan Laurel was the final performer to wear a Hitler mustache.
She didn't regret Rianne. And you shouldn't regret Rianne either.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Stan Laurel and Mr. Oliver Hardy.
I'll miss this when we're gone. So will you.
I have a trivia question for both of you guys then, because I don't know the answer, but what are the Academy Award nominations for both of those actors? Because it said Academy Award nominated.
Oh, well, let's look that up right now. John C. Reilly.
You know, sometimes they cheat on the PR.
That would be
presses like you know, if the movie they were in got nominated, they kind of count that sometimes.
That would be
But I think they both have their own.
Well, what's Steve Coogan's? I've seen him on TV, right?
But, oh yeah, he's a huge
But I didn't know
BBC,
he was a big
actor.
Movie star.
He's done a bunch of stuff here, but he's way more famous in the UK.
John C. Reilly was nominated Best Supporting Role in Chicago in 2003.
There
he
was
a Golden Globe nominee for
Dewey Cox,
and Chicago, and there's some other smaller awards he's won.
And I'll tell you that.
Oh, Steve Coogan, maybe is he the guy from the Trip or whatever?
Yeah, that's him.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I know that one.
And, you know, Alan Partridge with the big BBC shows. So he's been in a lot of stuff as well. Now, you know, the era of, like, Oliver and Hardy, you know, you have, like, kind of like the, you know, the big ones. You have Oliver and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, the Marx Brothers, and the Three Stooges. You always kind of, you know, in that kind of area.
So Steve Coogan was nominated for Philomena.
Yes.
And Best Motion Picture of the Year and Best Writing. He's never gotten and it was Golden Globe for Philomena as well.
Right, which was an amazing film.
I haven't seen that one.
So, you know, I always liked, I liked all four of them, but I always liked... I remember watching Three Stooges and Marx Brothers were probably my favorites out of all of them.
Oh, those
but,
are great. Little Rascals, are they in there somewhere?
Yeah, does that count? Same time?
It's got to be. It's Depression era, yeah, black and white, silent comedy.
Yep.
Oh, I used to love that.
You know, and you have, Buster Keaton was a little bit before because these were the talkies, but also you've got, you know, the vaudeville background too.
Right.
You know, they were doing vaudeville, you know, before they were doing, you know, films. Mm-hmm. So you have this long history of these performers. But, you know, I'm glad this movie got made because it's obviously it's showing some stuff you don't know about them. And it's also if you don't know who they are and you're a fan of comedy, it would, you know, benefit you to check them out for sure.
And it just looks like these two, Steve Coogan and John C. Reilly, are going to be good together.
I think so too. Oh, yeah. They had a real good chemistry for sure. And I wasn't expecting. I was like, how's they going to work, you know, together? How's it going to look? And it looks good.
It looks like a good movie.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, all right, DVD and Blu-rays. We've got the Meg.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
the Big Meg. Shark.
Mm-hmm.
Go see it.
Yeah.
It's everything you want it to be.
It's fun, for
big,
sure.
Big, ridiculous shark movie.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was, they showed a lot of the money shots actually in the trailer, so it kind of ruined some stuff. But, you know, it was still a fun giant shark movie. It had some tonal problems, but... you know, it's all right. It's all right. I'm nitpicking.
You are nitpicking a movie that was about a giant shark that comes up from the prehistoric...
The trench.
Crack in the earth or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. they came up with the kaijus.
Sure,
yeah, I
right.
got it. You know, from the guy, the Jaegers would have to fight eventually.
Yeah, it's...
But Mile 22, this was the Mark Wahlberg... action movie that was absolutely god awful. It was terrible. It was from everything from the action to the acting to the writing to the directing. It was a misfire on so many levels. And but the movie had this weird confidence about it where it just set up a sequel. But it didn't even set up a sequel as much as it set up like, well, this is part one. You know, if you want the whole story, you got to see part two. Like, it wasn't even a complete movie. It felt like it stopped in the middle. And it's like, well, now see, now we have to make a sequel. Because we made a half-assed movie that didn't go anywhere. Now, if you want the rest, you have to demand a sequel.
The sequel's where we're going to set it right.
Just give us some more money. We'll make it good.
We'll fix it. We'll fix it.
For God's sake. Yeah, here's an idea. Make a good movie first. And maybe we'll talk sequel.
That's a quick question. Has there ever been a movie where the first movie sucked?
Yeah.
They made a sequel, and the sequel was better? Can anyone answer that question?
That's a good question.
Aaron?
Judge Dredd. Actually, no, that was a remake.
There's some movies where I only came in on the second one, and I thought it was great, like the Mad Max. I didn't see Mad Max. I saw The Road Warrior, and I loved it. And then when I tried to revisit Mad Max, I didn't like it as much as
the Well, that's an there you go. That's an interesting one, because The Road Warrior came out many years after Mad Max.
Yeah.
Mad Max was this sort
of... low-budget Australian post-apocalyptic movie.
Cult hit.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting, but very low-budget.
Mm-hmm.
The Road Warrior was like budget, big money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hollywood.
There must have been... Well, I mean, speaking from a little bit of experience, like our first movie, I think it's safe to say not only didn't make any money, it ruined a lot of people's lives, but it didn't make anything. But we did make a sequel. I wouldn't say it's better. I'd say it's different. It's got more money in it. I like them both just as much for different reasons. But I think the reason we were able to make the sequel is because we had a lot. Like you mentioned cult following with Mad Max. I think we had, well, because of guys like you and like everybody was so cool, like all the comics, you know, and everything. So we had this buzz. So that's how we were able to go in and make another one. So maybe it doesn't have to be just successful, but if you have, like there must have been with the Mad Max, there must have been a cult.
There was a cult following Mad Max.
And they must have had quotes, and there must have been celebrity endorsements or things that they could go in there and say, let's do it again.
Yeah, it was one of those movies. Now, this is back in the 80s where it came out very sort of, the post-apocalyptic movies were really kind of starting.
Mm-hmm.
And it got... like it was one of those cult things that would show at art houses and you go, you got to see this. And it was like, wait, what?
Right.
I remember my dad taking my brother and I to The Road Warrior, and we had never seen Mad Max, but my dad was aware of it. He's like, Mad Max was this cult thing that came out a couple years ago when you guys were too young.
Mm-hmm. And got very limited release.
Limited release. You know, this is the video tape era was.
They weren't even sure how to market Rogue Warrior because they're like, well, no one's really seen the first. What do we do?
To me, it was just a standalone. I thought it was great. I had no idea there was already a series.
It was smart.
Yeah, for sure. And which one was the one where they overdubbed the Australian accents? Was that Road Warrior or was that the first one when they released it? I can't remember.
No, it was Mad Max. They overdubbed the Australian, there's a version where they were like, the Australian accents are too thick. Americans won't get it. So he's walking around going, we've got to go find it.
That's so funny. Oh,
man. Which is just hilarious.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then the last movie we were talking about was Alpha, which is like a boy and his dog movie, but in prehistoric times. I don't know anyone who's seen this movie.
Was it prehistoric times? I thought it was a robot dog.
Oh, maybe that is. I'm getting the dog movies confused. Yeah, maybe Alpha's the robot dog.
No, Alpha's like a military op, a psyop.
Oh, let's pull it up.
AI dog.
Oh, but it's the size of a horse. That one, I remember that. I remember the trailer for that one. Wow, that one looked absolutely awful.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think you're right. I'm thinking of another dog movie.
Yeah,
I would watch a prehistoric boy and his dog movie.
I know, maybe you're right. Maybe this was the prehistoric one.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Look at that.
Wow. No, I'm sorry.
You know, and I had you convince me otherwise.
I believe it. I should have just let you live. You know, and a prehistoric.
And I said
past.
I would watch one, and now I have to watch it because I said that I would.
A young man has to return home after being separated from his tribe during a buffalo hunt. He finds a similarly lost wolf companion and starts a friendship that would change humanity.
Mm. So is it like
in prehistoric times?
like Quest for Fire?
Yeah.
They find a monolith. Yeah.
Wait, now what's the robot?
Yeah.
Hey, what's the robot dog one where it's a military dog?
That's a ARFA?
Well, there's a
ARF-I?
That's it.
There's the episode of Black Mirror where they've got that terror dog machine.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, that just hunts you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then if it's about to die, it like puts a tracker in you so the other ones can come after you.
Oh, that's great. No, yeah. That was horrifying.
It's not that far away from
Axel.
Ah, there we go.
Alpha and Axel. So it's such different.
Yeah. So, you know, check them both out.
They both come up.
Yeah. Horrible dog movies.
Yeah. Enjoy.
That's something that we learned when we were making our second movie, that there's this thing, and we even talked about it in the movie, and it's called alpha stacking, where if you call your movie something that begins high in the alphabet, like A, like Alpha or Axel, and so you'll see so many movies doing that. And a lot of times the original title gets changed, like on IMDb, too. So, you know, because if you're on the plane and you're going through A to Z, it always starts with A. So those movies have an advantage. So everybody's trying to stack theirs in the beginning. It's really funny to watch. But yeah, we talked about it in the movie. And so at one point we wanted to call the movie And Punching the Clown, because it was just such a stupid idea. But we couldn't convince anybody. Yeah, it was just too weird.
You should just call it AAA Punching the Clown.
Yeah. Ah, Punching the Clown. But yeah, that's a thing. So I wonder if Alpha and Axel, it's usually the sign that a movie needs everything that it can get in there.
Yeah. You know? Every little trick they can pull off.
A AAA Alpha story.
So, and on the site spotlight, we're still giving away one free t-shirt with every t-shirt order. That will be going through Christmas. The downloads are working. In fact, Punching the Clown is still available on the site.
Wow,
you could download that for the
Comedy
Film Nerds.
That's awesome.
The message boards are back up. You can say hi to Charlene, our moderator. You know, people are slowly starting to go back to it. It is still a ghost town, but definitely come back and populate our message
boards,
won't you? Let us know your thoughts. And the Crab Feast merchandise is almost gone. We just have some all JUCO shirts and some hats left. And once that's gone, it is gone. There will not be any more made because they are stopping the show as of December. But there are some left, so get in on it. And then, you know, a Crab Feast all JUCO shirt, guess what? You get a free shirt with it when you order.
Limited edition.
Mm-hmm.
Never be made again. Just only you and your prehistoric dog can enjoy it.
So enjoy. All right, and premiering this week, we have Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, not to be confused with The Crimes of Johnny Depp. So, Fantastic Beasts is like a weird thing where you know, they needed more Harry Potter movies, so they picked an obscure character, and I'm like, all right, maybe they'll do one or two movies. Oh, no, there are five planned. This is two. So there's going to be three more after this one, and all of this takes place before Harry Potter's time, so they're all prequels. It's a big, long prequel story. So I was reading some articles that said that this one is a little tighter and doesn't have kind of the weird tonal shifts that the first one had, so they kind of... the filmmakers actually took to heart the criticism of the first one, yeah. So we'll see what actually happens with this one. But I will say this, J.K. Rowling has a very large attention to detail, so I really feel like this, you know, if you're a fan of the Harry Potter universe, you'll like this. If you're not going to change your mind, this movie. No, this isn't like an entry point for like, oh, you know, I was all on the fence about Harry Potter. Maybe Jude Law will convince me to come on board. No, he won't. This is it. This is basically, these are the most expensive fan films ever made and the most successful ones.
Wow.
The next movie is Instant Family. It looks like a fun, kind of like heartfelt-y comedy. They're just in time for the holidays.
Are you sure, you know, it's fun, Chris?
Yeah.
It feels like, what is it, the stepdad sequel?
I'll tell you,
like,
I do.
This is he becoming a Meet the Fockers guy?
I don't know. There's something about Mark Wahlberg that he just really makes me laugh. It's something about, like, you know, I know he's an action star too, but I really like him in comedies. I think he can be really funny. God, when he's yelling at Will Ferrell in that, what was that cop movie that they were in? The Other Guys. I think it was really funny.
Sure.
Like, he's a great comedy, like, straight man. So, I don't know. We'll see. It could be awful, for sure. The next movie is Widows. This is an interesting.
Oh, this is an all-girl Taken. This is a.
But it's directed by the 12 Years a Slave guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and the, you know, it's got Liam Neeson and a bunch of other people that apparently.
But it's Viola Davis and Michelle Rodriguez.
They kind of fill it a little bit with male stars who didn't last very long, so they can actually focus on the female stars because they're the survivors, sure. And then they go into the family business, as it were. So. It looks, again, it's one of those movies that it could be really fun, you know, kind of a female Taken. Like, it's almost like an Oceans movie, but with kick-ass women.
I've been saying this for years.
Yeah.
I want everyone to have a Taken. Yeah. I don't care, male or female. I just like it when someone's pushed past the brink and they got to go kick ass.
We're going through the casting Rolodex. I mean, eventually, I think that's going to happen.
We just had Peppermint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We had Minivan Taken with Halle Berry, you know.
Man on Fire,
like all of them.
This one, you know, since it's an ensemble, it's like, well, this is like 10 Taken movies at the same time.
Yeah, so. it's a team Taken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Go for it.
And the next movie is Green Book, which also looks like now we're getting to Oscar season too. This looks like a really good movie, like with Viggo Mortensen and what's the other actor's name now? But you know, he's
Ali.
Yes, and he's a singer, and Viggo Mortensen becomes his driver, but also becomes his friend, and it's, you know, just that interaction of like. The culture of black and white
in the deep south,
yeah, which is horrible, where, you know, he can come in and sing and pack the place, but can't eat at the restaurant.
Nope. Yeah, has to come in the back door.
Yeah, yeah, if he's allowed in at all.
Right.
So, looks like a great movie.
That guy needs a Taken.
Yeah, he does.
He's fed up with Jim Crow.
Yeah. All right. That is our show. Now, Henry, tell us about what you have going on and tell us about these two movies and where people can find them other than comedyfilmnerds.com.
Punching Henry is on Showtime now, and it's also, you can buy it on Amazon and iTunes and all that. First movie, Punching the Clown, is on your site and Amazon Prime. And I've had this kitchen series, you know, where I teach people how to cook. It's called Henry's Kitchen, and it's a tutorial, and it's a joke. I suck, and but it sort of, you know, got its own following. So I've been doing that, and I just made these masterclass versions of them, which are like high production value. It's through this company, Thrillist, and we went to New York, and they gave me a really beautiful kitchen. And
oh, wow.
And it was kind of weird because I was like, because the whole joke was I was imitating like these people in their bachelor apartments that just suck at, you know, cooking, and they're trying to teach you how to make chili, and the real story is like, what's your whole life about? Like, what are you doing? And So I was like, is it going to ruin it by suddenly changing the entire environment so that now I'm in a really nice kitchen? And I don't think it did. In some ways, I think it made it much better because now it's just like this kind of bull in a china shop thing. Like, I still have no idea what I'm doing, but I have all these nice utensils, and it looks like a real, like, Rachel Ray or one of these kind of kitchen things. So those you can see on YouTube, just Henry's Kitchen Masterclass. And I got a Patreon, Patreon/Henry's Kitchen for this so that I can keep going. And I'm going to make some...
biscuits,
some veal parmesan for the holidays. I've been, or not veal parmesan. What am I saying? Eggplant parmesan, because I've heard that's a hard one. So I'm going to take that on. That's pretty much what I'm doing with myself. But a lot of filmmaking stuff. I'm doing, you know, very nothing that's public yet. But I'm doing. I'm shooting a proof of concept thing for a buddy of mine's screenplay later in December, and that's I think all of 2019 for me is going to be about putting things on film.
Oh, that's great. Doing any touring?
Not much. I mean, I've it's kind of becoming a part of my past, I think. You know, I just the gigs were fewer and further between, and so I mean, I've got one gig in Fresno with Bob Zaney coming up in December. And that's it. You know, I just kind of suddenly felt like I wanted to be here doing this kind of thing, doing movies. I just, the road might be, I don't want to say it's a younger man's game because we all know people that are still doing it and doing it extremely well. Just for me, I'm just like, I can't get on a plane. You know, I just am tired of it.
It's hard to grind it out unless you're moving a lot of tickets.
Yeah. And when you look at what the best case scenario for something is, and it's still something that you don't want, it's like, okay, my best case scenario is I'm just going around, you know, playing for 1,000 people town to town every night and just making shitloads of money or whatever. Eh, I'd rather just stay here. So,
all right.
Maybe that'll change. Who knows?
All right. Well, that's our show, guys.
That is.
Please go to the Patreon and, of course, support the show in a lot of cool free ways. You know, the likes, the subscribes, the pushing the show out, positive reviews, all that stuff is great.
Oh, forgot to make an announcement about the show. We are going to be on Pandora.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yes, yes. So that's they're still kind of in that podcast beta phase, but you could go to Pandora and sign up for it right now when they release the podcast. Part of it, then you'll be one of the first in line.
Yeah, and then when that starts happening, you know, listen on Pandora, thumbs up it, you know, all those little analytic things help.
They certainly do, because that gets us in the tracking, then we get suggested more to other people who haven't heard of us.
Yeah.
Oh, I just thought of, you just reminded me of another plug. earlier this year, I have a friend named Gray Griffin, who's a voiceover actress. She's been in it for years. She's like Scooby-Doo and Rugrats and all these things. And she... is a comedian as well, and in April she asked me if I would direct her comedy special, and I had no idea how to do that, but it took a long time, but literally we made a comedy special, and I think it's great. It's on it's on Amazon Prime right now. It's called My First Comedy Special, and it's Gray, who's fantastically funny, and then Lisa Delarios, who's I don't know if you remember her, but she's from Austin, and then a couple of other people that are great too, Sebastian Corley and Haley Hoffmeister, that Gray just met on the scene, and we made a comedy special, and it's called My First Comedy Special, and people can check that out. I felt like I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that.
Good for you, man.
Yeah,
right on.
All right.
Well, that's it, guys. Thank you for listening. We're gonna we're also gonna record, like we said, the Overlord spoiler app.
Yes,
that'll drop next week during the Thanksgiving.
Yes, so you will never be without content.
You always have something delicious to put in your fresh ears every day.
And the Patreon, the special Patreon episode, that will be closer to the end of the month, just because of scheduling. So you'll get that probably the last week in November. Well, you'll still get it this month.
Oh,
don't
worry. The weekly, monthly Neil wrap up. That's always coming. Mm-hmm.
And I did want to mention, too, the last of the Long Ago and Far Away Kickstarter rewards will be going out this week. So if you don't get your reward in like a week and a half, make sure you email info@comedyfilmnerds.com and we will take care of it. But they're almost out. And, of course, it is for sale at the Comedy Film Nerds store. And I will sign it for you. Check it out.
Get your holiday shopping done at comedyfilmnerds.com, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Episode 442, guys. Bang it out.
halfway to 8.
That's amazing.
84. You thought I wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much to Henry Phillips.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah.
Good to see you, my friend. Thank you to Aaron and everybody here at the All Things Comedy World Headquarters. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.